All right, well, starting with The Strange Talent of Luther Strode, number one, we begin with this this sort of look into the future. The very first thing that I kind of want to see you guys talk about is, you know, you mentioned that you began to work as a group and you really became comfortable with each other's strengths and what, you know, person X could do with scene Y. Is that true for just this first issue, or is this still where you guys were sort of feeling each other out, see who could do what?
I would say with this first seven pages, there was still a matter of feeling people out to it, I think, for me. I know that looking at the script, which I have that open here too, like, there's definitely more description than I probably would have done, like, if this were the second series Trad and I were doing, there probably would not be as much panel description as I had in those initial parts of the script, but we were going into that blind, and you never know how much an artist needs. Like, I don't want to Alan Moore it up too much, but...
Yeah, the first little bit of the book was, I mean, it wasn't only me, you know, getting used to working with these other two. Like, honestly, it was me getting used to just working on an entire issue of a comic, you know, and also getting used to inking myself. So this whole first issue, I still really enjoy it, but it's fun going through and looking at, you know, the art evolve as the series goes. Because, yeah, the first six pages, yeah, were done just so much before everything else. So it was definitely getting to feel each other out. And Felipe and I hadn't actually spoken on the colors before. Like, it was, we kind of like did them. I did the art and he did the colors separately from one another, which, you know, is one of those things where you don't think about, you know, when you're reading it. But, you know, getting to know each other as artists really does help. So... yeah, those first six pages to me were definitely like a test run.
Yeah, that's right. And I'd also like to mention that these pages aren't exactly the same ones we pitched, because yeah. I was going for a more garish, sort of weirder palette. And as soon as the comic was approved, we actually rethought how the colors would look like, and we made them deeper, darker. And from then on... we sort of adapted to each other's work, I guess. Nowadays, Thread can send me an image without any commentary, and I'm going to do something, and I'm almost entirely sure he's going to like it.
Yeah, definitely. The first six pages, the pitch packet, yeah, like Felipe said, they were a different thing. But, you know, once again, it was because he and I had never spoken on basically what we wanted out of the book. But, yeah, now we are definitely at the point where I can't think of a single time that I've given him like anything to go off of in the past couple months. You know, it's just one of those things where I just send it to him, and yeah, he absolutely knows where to go with it. And I always just trust the direction he's going to take it.
And I, of course, am, you know, completely uninvolved at this point. And I don't mean that sarcastically. Like, there's these great whacks of conversation where Trad and Felipe are talking about coloring stuff, and I have absolutely nothing of substance to add. So I'm like, good work, guys. I just, you know, at that point, it's just kind of cheerleading. Whereas with these pages, I actually did talk with Philippe and Trad both a little bit about the coloring. So I was more involved with that. That working relationship evolved really rapidly. Like, I pretty much stopped getting involved materially in like coloring and stuff by the end of that issue. And I wasn't that involved to begin with.
Now, with these first initial six pages, the pitch pages, you said that it was colored differently, but is this the same stuff that you had sent over to Image originally, or did you end up rewriting anything, redrawing anything?
This is the same artwork, like same writing, same pencils, inks, but the final version of the colors that Felipe did, he redid those after the pitch had already been accepted, actually.
Originally, Felipe was lettering as well, and Image suggested that we with another letterist, which we ended up going with Phonographics. So it actually had somewhat different colors and somewhat different lettering in the original pitch.
Justin, you'd mentioned earlier that the decision to start in the future is something that you sort of borrowed from Goodfellas. But sort of within the story itself, why did you think that it... I'm sorry, that's going to sound terrible. But why did you think it would be a good idea to sort of start at the end and work your way backwards in terms of the evolution of the character?
Because I wanted people to know right at the... Well, there's two reasons. One of them, the big one, is I wanted people to know from the beginning that, yes, this book is going to get incredibly violent. Because the first issue is relatively not all that violent, comparatively speaking. I mean... You look at the first issue and you compare it to issue 6, and it's, you know, sort of a whole different beast. So I wanted people going in knowing what kind of comic it was. I didn't want to pull the rug out from underneath people midway through. The other reason is that I just wanted to start on an action scene to get people's interest, and that was a good way to do it without having to start totally in media res with it. So I like doing that anachronic order thing to a certain extent. That's kind of a little Tarantino riff as well.
And the first 6 pages here, they're not directly, they're not the exact same, but this is the scene from issue 5, correct?
The first 3 pages are from issue 5.
Right.
They're from a different angle and point of view. We didn't just reuse the same panels, but yeah, that's the scene you will eventually see in issue 5. And then in issue 5, which we'll talk about that more when we get there, but in this scene, we're seeing it from Luther's point of view, relatively speaking. I mean, it's still, you know, it's not through his eyes, but you're looking at it from Luther's point of view. In issue 5, you'll be seeing it from Petra's point of view, which gives you an entirely different view on what you're seeing. And context changes what you're seeing there as well. And that was something I was actually kind of intentionally trying to do. Like, I wanted to contrast the difference between you see this big, burly guy who's just ripped apart these other dudes, and then you immediately see him as a high school student who's not at all that kind of person, or at least does not appear to be. So I wanted that, you know, contrast to be interesting to the audience, to have them going, well, what the hell happens?
And in terms of the backgrounds, we'll see this a lot over the entire series, but there, you know, the second page here has like a Godfather poster and a Scarface poster snuck in. What was the decision to sort of put in the little references? Trad, is this all you, or was there instruction that, you know, put in a clue to such
no,
and such
the,
work of fiction?
Other than there were a handful of times where Justin named the high school, Voorhees High School, and then, I know Felipe had mentioned a couple like horror nods and stuff here and there that we added in there, but for the most part, all the posters on the wall and the t-shirts, all the people wear and stuff, that was just stuff that I threw in. Because I think things like that, you know, people are jumping into this comic and it's 6-issue miniseries, and it's something that you don't have a breadth of knowledge to pull from. So because I could put it in this real world, you can immediately relate to things more quickly if you're putting things that people know already, and you know, you have this group of, you know, gangsters, drug dealers, whatever they are, and to like the ultimate, you know, not to say anything against Godfather or Scarface, but the ultimate like posters, you know, that little wannabe gangster dudes would have in their home, you know, like if you look at the Jersey Shore house, they have the Scarface poster and all that stuff, you know. So it's I felt like that was the best thing to put in there to show what type of guys these dudes were.
So how did you guys decide to craft the explicit violence in it? Because it's pretty specifically, you know, layered out in which Luther beats these people with what he does to them and the way the blood splatters and everything.
I know for this particular scene, what actually happens to each guy is in the script. Obviously not where the blood splatter and stuff goes. I'm not that insane. But in terms of rips a dude's arms off, jams it down his throat, all that kind of stuff, that stuff, as I recall, was in the script. And what I was going there is that superhero comics are inherently a violent medium. They just are. That's just how it rolls. And that's fine. I mean, obviously I like violence or I wouldn't have written the book, but I wanted to get across the idea that like this kind of violence is really genuinely horrifying. So it had to be extreme. And I wanted this initial three-page opening to be shocking. I mean, that was the intent behind it. I wanted, you know, I wanted you to turn the page and be like, damn! Which I think Trad and Felipe absolutely nailed.
Yeah, I think that with the violence in the series, I think that it was interesting. And one of the things that interested me about the series was just, you know, it has this hyper-violence throughout, but a reader's perception of this violence, you know, was going to change, or if we did this correctly, it was going to change, because, you know, a lot of people opened to that first spread and thought it was hilarious, you know, and you know, because it was kind of tongue-in-cheeky. You have these guys, like, one guy's getting, you know, kicked and his guts are exploding, he's shooting into the roof and all this stuff. So, you know, it's this ridiculous thing, but then by the time you get to issues 5 and 6, you know, you have this same scene redone again, you know, just from a different viewpoint, and, you know, not a single person that I've seen commented, you know, in issues 5 or 6, like, oh my god, that was so funny, or, man, when that character got killed, that was just hysterical, you know, so it's kind of interesting to see this book evolve into what it did, and that was the goal from the beginning for all of us getting into it. We knew that hopefully this would be a comment on violence in comics and in media as much as it was, you know, an entertaining read.
So initially for you, was there, you know, you mentioned it being a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but like you guys said, the average fan reaction to this huge spread is like, oh man, that's so badass, and it's crazy, the guy's on the ceiling. But you really didn't find anything funny about it at all, did you?
Well, in like I said, in the first bit, in that first one, I did have fun with it, and because I knew, once again, I knew where the story was going, and with that one, I kind of made it a little bit more fun, because that one is completely out of context. You know, someone's just going to open it up and go, wow, and we wanted that to be like the draw to the series. You know, you wanted to pull readers in, and we knew that a big, crazy, intense, I guess you could put fun on it, spread like that would draw in readers. But, so yeah, I had some fun with some of the violence in there, you know, to have a little cheekiness to it. But overall, we knew where we were going, and we knew that, we didn't want to make violence seem like a joke or a funny thing, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like overtly like, ha ha, hysterical. It's not Garth Ennis slapstick violence like you would find in The Boys, necessarily, I don't think. But I did have a very kind of, like, Dead Alive sort of, you know, there is an aspect of lightheartedness that's horrible as it is. And like I said, as Trad has mentioned, that was sort of intentional, because I want this to, you know, the idea was, and I'm going to get real pretentious, is, yeah, you want people to say, oh, that's cool and it's kind of funny. And then when they see it again in issue 5, no, this is horrifying. Like, this is an absolute nightmare. Like, you would never want to see this in real life. And hopefully we did that.
Felipe, for you, when you get a scene or a page like this, and it's this crazy, grotesque violence that just calls for the most gruesome of colors, how do you approach sort of tackling something like this?
Well, usually, you know, there's going to be a lot of red, so you have to plan around that. And things like the looter, you already know he has a dark cloth, dark suit. And then I start to sort of build how the scene is going to be around that. Usually, depends on the moment. For instance, these pages I had seen before, said before, they were desaturated. I actually meant they're very saturated. I guess the main thing I do is not obstruct the line work, try to facilitate the flow of the narration without you know, keeping the story moving with the colors as well, I guess. So from scene to scene, there's going to be a change of mood to sort of let the reader know, for instance, it's another place, another day, another scene. So that's how I sort of look at the pages.
Yeah, Felipe also added that kind of pink mist look to it. you'll notice when you see these guys again that there's kind of a reddish cast to the whole thing, which I'm a big fan of. I really, really liked how it worked. And I think it did add to that sense of different time, different place.
One thing I probably should have brought up earlier, and it totally slipped my mind, but Trad and Felipe, what tools do you guys use for your artwork? How much of it is digital? What do you do, Trad? Do you do like paper, pencil, or is it all digital?
My side of things is actually all traditional. I lay it out loosely on with pencil. Just do my roughs and, you know, start with a really small thumbnail, send it to the guys to get okayed, and then I go straight from that little 2x3 penciled thumbnail onto the full 11x17 page, and then lay down everything, like I said, really loosely with pencil, and then I go straight in with ink, and I use a brush predominantly to do all my inking with for architecture and stuff like that. You know, very straight edge line stuff, I will use a ruler and Micron tech pen type stuff. But yeah, I'd say it's probably 90% just brush and India ink, which is pretty typical in the comic world. I would say that's what I think most people use if they're not doing digital. But yeah, that's the way I go with it.
And I use Adobe Photoshop, which is also sort of the industry standard. I like to add a bit of texture in these pages, which I previously scanned. It's a regular sort of ink wash texture, so it won't look too digital. And that's it. I'm kind of impressed that Trad mentioned he wasn't very used to ink his pages, because if you looked at the originals in high definition, as I do when he sends me the files, they're very, very clean and very precise. They look actually like they were digitally inked, but no, it's ink and pen.
Thank you. And yeah. I would say Felipe has helped me out greatly with learning the side of scanning things and what file types and how to send things and everything, because I jumped into this. Like I said, this is my first published thing, so on the comic book production side of things, it's been great having a person who has had experience with that, because, you know, he'd be the guy who go, well, actually, could you change it to this file type, or could you do this to the image to make it more crisp, you know, because I'm sure the ones that I was originally sending him were not in the right format and all this stuff, and he was kind of like, try this other thing out. So it's been very informative for me to have more experienced people on my side, you know.
Mm-hmm. So moving forward, we get right into the younger Luther when he first gets the Hercules Method, and, you know, we meet his mother and his best friend. When creating the young Luther and the look of his world and who he interacts with, what were you guys sort of going for with the young Luther? Obviously, he's a pretty kind of sort of the stereotypical skinny nerd who, you know, if he goes to the beach, he's not the hero of the beach. But who are you sort of like channeling with young Luther here?
I know that, you know, my work is, you know, pretty largely stylized, but I think that a lot of times the more stylized work is easier to relate to, the more cartoony it is. A lot of times the more people can click with it. I'm not a huge fan of, you know, photorealism and stuff like that, but in creating like a realistic world, like I wanted Luther to seem like a real kid, you know, and his friend and his mom, you know, all of them. I wanted them to seem like real people. So I based a lot of the environments and stuff off of, you know, places that I go. You know, his apartment was based off of my brother's old apartment, and the high school, you know, there are scenes that were based on my high school, you know, and stuff like that. So I was just trying to approach it all with a touch of realism, and, you know, you want to have some personality in there, and you want to have, you know, you want to have you as an artist in there. So yeah, I tried to inject a lot of myself and into the artwork to give it a sense of relatability and realism.
And for me, it's interesting. I was just thinking about it now as I'm rereading this stuff, is that actually, the way Trad has drawn stuff has influenced how I wrote the characters. Like, Pete, for example, was always meant to be the comic relief, but, like, the specific, like, sheer amount of enthusiasm he throws in everything, like, that, to an extent, like, is because of how Trad draws him, because Pete, like, has this kind of, like, jumpy puppy quality to me when Trad draws him.
Yeah.
And that has changed it. And likewise, there's a slightly, I don't want to say mournful quality to Luther, but especially in the beginning for a lot of the stuff, he's, you know, he looks kind of quiet. So he probably has less dialogue than he would have if he had been drawn by another artist.
And I would agree with the mournful quality thing. I did try to make him have just kind of, you know, a look to him where he does have this kind of like pensive nature. And once again, that goes with, you know, when you have a style and when you are you're able to exaggerate these emotions more. To me, I think of it like kind of like a stage play in a comic book. You have to kind of like push things further than you would in like in a film. So, you know, like when I have Pete being Pete, I draw him like extra excited and jumpy and try to really push the facial expressions and hand motions and all that stuff to really get these characters' personalities out. And even if it's something subtle, like, you know, giving Luther kind of like a pouty face and slouchy shoulders and, you know, stuff like that, hopefully it all adds to the characters that Justin is writing.
And I'm not a big fan of explaining a lot of stuff overtly, which Trad's gift with body language and facial expressions actually has really helped that. Like, looking at page, I want to say it's page 5, the last panel where his mom's peeking out the door. Just the fact that she's peeking out the door says a lot about her mental state. But, like, even the little, like, sliver of her face that you can see goes a lot to explaining the kind of background they're coming from. And on the next page, you see she's got a busted arm, which we never actually mention in text. You do get to see how she got the broken arm later on. But all of that, my intention was, I want you to understand, like, on some level, something bad has happened, and Luther's coming from kind of a rough background. And likewise, like, the pensive quality that he has plays right into that. Like, you know, this is a good kid, and he's not, you know, Mr. Depressed, but he's kind of quiet. Like, and that all comes from, sadly, people I knew in real life that had been abused. The pensive quality and that kind of stuff, and a lot of the way that I tried to make Luther act is kind of a composite of people I'd known that had had a rough home life growing up. I fortunately did not, thank God, but I'm from a poor rural area, so kids that had mean fathers was not a rarity, unfortunately.
One thing I wanted to ask about, and I think this is a good segue because it'll, you know, sort of lighten things a little bit, but, you know, Trad, you're definitely too young for this, because you are you're younger than I am, and I'm only 24. But
oh no, we're the same age. I turned 24 on Halloween of last year. So
oh okay, so birthday, you're catching up.
Yeah,
you're
I'm catching there.
Felipe, Justin, had either of you ever sent away for the Charles Atlas method?
I did not.
Nope.
My mother would not let me. I wanted to. As an adult, I actually have read the Charles Atlas books. As you can tell from my rippling physique, have an interest in weightlifting and that kind of stuff. So I actually have tracked that stuff down as an adult because it interests me. I've never actually done it, but I am familiar with what is actually in the Charles Atlas ads.
Now, in terms of what Charles Atlas asks you to do versus the Hercules method here, I mean, the way that Luther bulks up is kind of through meditation initially, and then he sort of begins to move on and you see him do some light exercises, but comparatively, is that sort of taken from the Charles Atlas method?
It is, to an extent. The selling point of the Charles Atlas stuff was always that you didn't need to have weights to do it. It was primarily, he did a thing called dynamic tension, which was basically pressing the muscles against each other, you know, like squeezing your hands together and chest and all that kind of stuff. And there were some moves. You can actually see on page 8 what Luther's doing when he's flexing there and doing the push-ups and stuff. That actually is directly from Charles Atlas stuff. The meditation is not. The meditation is something that other weightlifting books got into back in the 60s. The 60s being what the 60s are. If you read weightlifting stuff then, they were big into self-hypnosis and meditation and all that kind of stuff. And it worked with generally how I envisioned the Hercules method working to give powers, which is to say that it basically allows you to use your mind to control your body, which has always been a theme of the physical culture stuff like Charles Atlas does. So the Hercules method is pretty heavily influenced by stuff that actually existed. Just as far as I know, nobody got the ability to rip people's heads off from it.
Moving forward, we meet the librarian for the first time, and this is a really sort of dark and nasty sequence that doesn't really make sense initially. You know, you've got all these people chained up for some weird reason, and, you know, the first page is this just this one guy pulling out his tooth with his tongue and using it as a weapon. So, obviously, when you guys had Luther Strode, you knew where it was going and what would eventually be revealed with the Hercules method and the book and why Luther received it. But in terms of little sequences like this, that are just two pages long and they only give you these sort of really brief glimpses, how do you go about deciding what you're going to show, how you're going to frame it, how many clues you're going to put into the panels?
For me, that was a lot of mental lifting. Actually, little scenes like this scene in particular, actually took a lot of thought, because I knew that one of the things, and as in this commentary in general, it's going to be kind of spoilery for the series as a whole, but by the end of this, there's an implication that if you get too far gone into the Hercules method, like, you basically become prone to uncontrollable rage, which is essentially what has happened to these guys. These are people who are so powerful and so dangerous that they cannot be allowed to roam at will. They are, however, still in charge of all this, which is something I think I maybe could have got across better. A lot of people thought the librarian just had them, and he was, you know, just had them there abusing, et cetera, et cetera. The tooth thing in particular, which actually a lot of people, it's apparently one of the iconic images of the book, if we can use the term iconic for this particular book. A lot of people have mentioned it. That was just to say that even when these guys are fully bound, they're still incredibly dangerous. Like, you know, the only way to, like, really make these people safe would be to kill them. And the guy you're seeing doing the tooth thing here is actually Kane, which is something you should hopefully be able to put together by the end of the book, but I'm not sure. Like I said, I'm not big into explaining things. I like to imply so people can infer. But this particular scene actually took an awful lot of writing, so I was happy with the amount of information that was contained in it. It is, in fact, a lot creepier than what I had in my head, thanks to Trad. Just intending it not to be creepy, just that Trad outdoes me in the creep factor.
I like the creepy stuff, man.
This is my favorite page of Visual One, I guess, with Kane tearing the tooth out and spitting it. It's awesome.
It was a lot of fun. And this was, like I said, this was the, I guess, one of the first scenes we did after the book had gotten picked up. So it was an invigorating scene to start with, you know. And I like the way Justin does the storytelling of definitely showing a little bit. Because to me, when I think of a lot of my favorite series, it when you have things that are just kind of like implied, it makes future reads more interesting, because, you know, when we move on to the sequels and more information is revealed, it will just be cool for people to go back and be like, oh, well, dang, that's been there the entire time. I just might not have put it all together. So I love the, you know, obviously we knew the who these characters were and all this stuff when we were doing this scene, but we also understood that other people would not be grasping this immediately. And, you know, even by the end of, you know, The Strange Town of Luther Strode, a lot of these questions would still exist. But yeah, like I said, putting in little nods here and there, I think, keeps people interested and makes people more interested in future titles.
So, you know, given that we've sort of admitted that anybody listening to this is going to know that spoilers are discussed, but you guys are discussing it already as in future titles. So you knew that even beyond your initial miniseries, you wanted to take all of these characters beyond the places where they were here, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, eventually. Actually, it's good that we're discussing this scene, because this particular scene, when I was writing it, in around here is when I worked out the background mythology for all this. As Trent mentions, I know who all these people are. And, like, I have a real good idea of how the murder cult works and where it's been in history and all that kind of stuff. Very little of which made it into the actual comic book. But at that point, like, I realized that there were more stories that I would like to tell in this particular world, because I thought that stuff was interesting. And I saw a narrative arc for Luther that could work in terms of his character. This series, though, is designed to work as a standalone thing. Like, if The Strange Town of Luther Strode was all you read, hopefully it's a satisfying story. Like, it's got a complete, fairly grim character arc for Luther, and, you know, it ends in a reasonably definitive way. But at the same time, there's a greater world there and different stuff that I thought would be cool to explore. And lots of cool imagery that I would like to get to. Like I said, it's just a matter of this is kind of that part in the script where I realized that we could do more than one of these.
One thing, before we move on, one thing I really want to discuss is sort of the art nerd element of this. And Felipe, this might be best for you. But in terms of this one page with the tooth, you know, the background here is... I can only imagine that, Trad, when you did this, the background was completely blank, and that the splatters in the background, that's all you, Felipe? Is that correct?
Kind of. The black splatter was already in the original page, but you see there's a visible texture there. I made it more clear in this scene with the bound, and added the green hues and everything to make it very slimy, very sewer-like. But the black splatter you see in page 8 was threads. I added the actual sort of background texture that's very clear.
When filling in that negative space, you know, oftentimes you can just... The average page here, for example, in Luther Strode, it just has the white gutters. But this one, it's completely different. You know, the black splatter, the gray... How did you decide to really sort of play up that nitty-gritty, disgusting background aspect to go along with the tooth sequence?
Well, the previous page 7, is very... there's a lot of white in it because there's a central big panel with Luther training. So when you turn the page from 7 to 8, the fact that it's all so heavy and dark sort of pops, makes the actual little panels pop out and really lets the reader know he's in another place altogether, another scene altogether. And I think it fits with the actual action that's going on, to have sort of a dirty exterior to the panels instead of keeping it only white.
So as we move forward, we have Luther eating breakfast, and this is the first introduction of an element of his power, if not the full thing. It's sort of that slow growth. And it feels like this is probably the first, you know, you guys have mentioned Peter Parker and Spider-Man as an inspiration, but this scene in particular feels like a pretty sort of obvious homage to the sequence of Spider-Man, at least in the movies, in which he first begins to discover his powers, and he also saves plates from falling. Is that intentional?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's a complete homage slash ripoff of the scene where Tobey Maguire grabs, you know, Kirsten Dunst's plate in the original, or, you know, Peter Parker and Mary Jane. Yeah, absolutely.
Mentioning Tobey Maguire, actually, that kind of brings up an interesting question. Did you have any particular person in mind when both of you, like when you were writing Luther or when you were drawing Luther?
I didn't. My characters, in general, tend to just be kind of, like, I think probably is the case with almost any writer, are just composites of people I knew. And physically, their qualities tend to depend on where the story needs to go. Like, Luther needs to be eventually kind of a big, strapping guy. So, like, he needed to be tall and have a certain kind of frame and stuff. And I wanted a certain look for him, like the fact that he has kind of longish hair and he has glasses and that kind of stuff all kind of feeds into the general overall impression you're supposed to get of the character. But as far as actual, you know, living people or actors or anything, I did not.
Yeah, no, I, typically with main characters and stuff, I don't really like to base them off of real people just because I like being able to completely create everything about this character, you know what I mean? Like their reactions, you know, their nose, their eyebrow, their, you know, whatever. And because, you know, you get so accustomed to drawing this character and you have to draw them from a million different angles and making all these different facial expressions. So when it comes to guys that I will be drawing a whole lot, I definitely try not to base them off of any real life person. But every now and then I'll throw in, if there's just like a little cameo character or whatever, that's only there for a page or so, I'll throw in some friends or some actors or this and that, or, you know, musicians or whatnot, just to have a fun little like Easter egg for people to catch. But yeah, all the main characters in this, even though a lot of people, once they meet me, they do realize that most of my characters in some way or another look a little bit like me, but
minus the freak hand.
Minus my freak hand. But yeah, beyond that, yeah, I try to steer clear of any sort of, you know, real life personality or TV personalities, whatever, as the basis for my characters.
Now, you mentioned hiding little sort of cameo Easter eggs. Are there any of those that we've missed so far?
There are. Yeah, I think there are. I don't know if they're, I think everyone caught most of the stuff in issue one, because I know that, you know, one of the biggest things that people were talking about in issue one upon reading it were, you know, the posters on the wall and this and that. I mean, I threw a few like inside joke type things in there that only myself or my close friends would pick up on. But, you know, as for the ones that, you know, everyone saw, the Pete's reading We Three, or that actually, no, I don't know that many people picked up that Petra is wearing a Black Flag shirt in the hallway scene.
I but, feel that's just you youthy people's lack of respect for Black Flag showing.
Well, I threw it in there, so to show a little bit of respect.
Yeah, in this scene in the kitchen, there are two things going on. One is that, yes, as is kind of overtly stated in the text, Luther is basically having to consume a gajillion calories because he's growing again. The other thing is, as Matt had mentioned, we're getting to see the first implication of a power that goes beyond just what you could accomplish with exercise in the real life. And what that is Luther is gaining the ability to read people's body language. It's not seeing the future, per se, but he can see from the way his mom's muscles and stuff are moving that she's going to drop those plates, and that allows him to react to stuff faster than he would otherwise have been able to do. That is one of the primary abilities that he demonstrates through the thing. It's the first thing we're going to see here. The ghosting effect is just a way to visualize that. That's not literally what Luther's seeing, but it's a good way to represent it in a comic.
Mm-hmm.
Or so I thought.
So as we go into the school and we see Petra and her amazing Black Flag shirt. How did you, or where did Petra come from as a character?
You know, I'd mentioned that we were doing, it's a riff on partially one of the inspirations with the Charles Atlas ad. The iconic Charles Atlas ad that I mentioned earlier is Mac at the Beach, where he goes to get a girl and she has no interest in him because he doesn't have muscles and he gets sand to kick in his face. He does his exercise thing and he gets the girl. So since we were riffing on that, I wanted him to have a love interest. But when I was writing her, I did not want to write the kind of girl that would be interested in a guy just because he had muscles. And I thought it would be funny that she's already interested in Luther. Like, at this point, she knows exactly who he is. She hasn't really said anything to him, but she's definitely interested. Like, the only thing that's standing between them is Luther being lacking confidence to go up and actually say anything to her, which, in that case, Pete does him a huge favor here by hurling him into the locker.
One thing I was kind of curious about with her is the name specifically. It's the name of, it's a place in Jordan. It's a historical archaeological city. But I was kind of wondering, was there anything specific that you wanted to sort of hint at with her name being Petra?
No. I'm not, as a rule, a meaningful name person. I just happened to like the name Petra, and it seemed like it fit her. I mean, it's, you know, the whole Petro Rock thing. In as much as you can divine any meaning from it, it's, you know, she is kind of a tough chick. And it sounded like a tough chick name to me. And it sort of implies some stuff around her background. It never comes up, I don't think, in the text. I did mention it in some of the back matter. But her last name is Dobrev, so she's of European descent, which matters when you get to meet her father briefly, and it kind of figures into who she is as a person and some other stuff. But as far as being a very overt reference, it wasn't that. The other thing was, and I swear I do some of this stuff just to amuse myself, there's a thing where you're not supposed to have characters having names that sound too similar. So the fact that he has a friend named Peter and a girlfriend named Petra just entertain me, because that's the kind of stuff that happens in real life. You don't get a lot of in fiction.
Yeah, and I think in building Petra as a character, from my point of view, it was the look of her and everything and her attitude. It was, you know, obviously all of us being males and, you know, comic books predominantly being, you know, having male creators, it's really difficult at times to do justice to the female side of the equation. And I think that you're always walking that fine line. And I think with Petra, I just tried to think of, you know, friends of mine that I thought, you know, fit that bill, you know, and like, am I creating a character that...
Cough Elizabeth Field.
Am I creating a character that I think these friends of mine would think was cool? But am I also building a character that... you know, that people would read and think, oh, I went to high school with a girl like that. You know what I mean? One who, you know, she does have this, she is genuinely a tough girl, but, you know, everyone specifically at that age, you know, Luther and Petra and even to an extent Pete, you know what I mean? You're, as a teenager, you're this bag of emotions and you're trying so hard to put on this facade that you're something tougher or better than you are, you know. So I have this kind of like permanent smirk on her face, you know what I mean? Not because she genuinely is this untouchable, you know, unbeatable girl, you know. It's just because she is putting on this this tough face because she feels like she should, you know. So that was something that I was thinking about a lot when creating both her and Luther, because there's a lot more to them given their kind of like domestic disturbance background than you would initially know, like, from this, just this first issue, you know?
And with Luther and with Petra, especially when you see them together in the way that they look, specifically in the color spectrum, like, Luther, he's got blonde hair, a plain white t-shirt. Petra has this, you know, really vibrant hair color, and, you know, the shirt over another shirt. When putting these two together, was the sort of parallels in how they dress and how they look something you specifically had in mind?
I think so, yeah, definitely. Because I think that a lot of people, once again, a lot of high schoolers too, what you wear and how you present yourself is so paramount at that point in your life. You know, you got to present yourself the way that you want to be seen. And, you know, to have Luther, he's not... he doesn't come from a wealthy background at all, so he's just wearing kind of crappy clothes, and it adds to his pensive, kind of like wallflower type personality. And with Petra, you know, she doesn't come from the best background either, but, you know, you can tell she's trying to put on that, like, oh, I'm wearing Black Flag and I got ripped clothes and I'm wearing, you know, anarchy shit, you know. it just they are these complete opposites, but, you know what I mean, the cliche of opposites attract, you know, it is very common, you know, for that kind of thing to happen. So I thought that they were an interesting, it was this back and forth where instead of having the outgoing guy, like, trying to chase down the girl, you know, you had this girl who was really outgoing and a guy who was kind of meek, you know.
I don't remember if this was on the script, but maybe it's a cheap symbolism, but she had such a strong personality. I went with a red for her hair, to make her sort of fiery and to as you mentioned, to sort of oppose Luther, who's so bland and so pale. So I said, maybe we should go with a redhead.
Yeah, that was, if I'm not mistaken, that was, I mean, I know I had no hair color in mind. I'm pretty sure that was all you. I know I had nothing to do with it, so.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Although I do have a tendency to write an awful lot of redheaded chicks, so. I think that was just serious.
And by the way, I never thought about Mary Jane. It's completely an accident that she's a redhead.
I honestly didn't think that either.
Just now.
I was actually going to bring up her hair color right after that, so I'm glad you did that for me. Moving forward and sort of skipping the bully confrontation, because I think we can talk about it more with the next scene in mind. The dodgeball sequence. Now, dodgeball is like a pretty big part of being in high school. I remember having to play it a fair deal amount, but was this always going to be dodgeball for you? Did you guys ever think that, you know, it could it have been any sport? Could have been football or basketball or is the basic, I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, this sort of scene revolves around that image of Luther just putting out his hand and stopping that one ball. Is that sort of the main part that you wanted to get at here?
Yeah. There were actually a couple of things that went there. Other sports in general don't have that same kind of, it was a big quality of, like, you know, if you're a small, weak kid, dodgeball is not going to go well for you. That is not really the case in gym class if you're playing basketball as much, or football even, or even baseball especially. You know what I mean? That's not as hard as in terms of the nerds versus jocks kind of thing. So that was an aspect of it. The other thing was I wanted Luther to grab that ball offhandedly without looking, and he needed to be able to hurt the bully, basically, and dodgeball basically filled all those requirements for me. And I just think, you know, it just felt right. So I never actually considered it being any other kind of sport.
Yeah, I think the choice going with dodgeball was the best because it, like you said, pretty much everyone can relate to having to play that in high school, and it was the most obvious way for a bully or for anyone to kind of like show their dominance, you know, to their whole class, like, oh, watch how hard I can throw this ball and, you know, into this poor dude's face, you know. And it wasn't like when you were playing football or basketball, they usually split you up into teams. It wasn't literally the whole class playing, so, you know, in gym class it was you and everyone you knew, and everyone could see whether you were, you know, athletic or not. So to me, I thought it was the perfect opportunity to show how much of a douche the bully was, you know, and you know, a perfect, you know, stand up for yourself type moment for Luther, you know.
With this scene in particular, I think the way that you guys illustrate the detail of the action sequence, you know, as much as it was really apparent in the beginning with the horror elements, but this one in particular, I think, really is where you guys start to come into your own in terms of how you display the violence. Because the ball in particular, in how it moves, the way that you've got that sort of, when the bully initially throws it, and it's that the way that, you know, on sort of anime cartoons, and they flash to the moving background with the lines that's like a single color. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, definitely. That was anime and stuff is a huge influence on me as an artist. So, and I think it was an amazing opportunity to show where the action was going in this book, because basically it's saying, you know, if this is how intense this dodgeball fight is going to be, just imagine what's going to happen later, you know. And it's and if you can inject a lot of fun and action and movement into a dodgeball scene, I think that's a pretty evident sign that you're going to be able to do so in, I guess, heavier scenes in the future. So I just had a lot of fun with this one. And yeah, with a lot of the speed lines and all that stuff, I was thinking about how in anime they tend to make even the most mundane things seem, you know, massively important. Like, even if someone like embarrasses you, you know, you flip upside down on your head and your nose starts bleeding and all that good stuff. So it was definitely referential to that type of storytelling.
And in terms of the violence and where it comes from, like with the trail of blood coming out of this kid's nose, how did you sort of decide to pull it at an angle like that?
To me, I'm just always trying to put, I guess, as much movement into action panels as I can, because inherently you have these still panels, but you're trying to convey a lot of motion there that you can't pull off in as you could with like animation, where you could literally have these characters moving. So, you know, with a lot of the line work, the reason it looks fast and stuff is just because, you know, when you put those diagonal lines and you set up a page like that, hopefully it reads as fast motion. So yeah, to literally have the motion line of the ball turn into the blood of his nose busting open and you know, that arc and that kind of like ribbon-esque quality of the blood, that was all. I always just try to throw a lot of very angular lines in there because I think it reads as very fast.
One thing I was kind of wondering about, and you know, this could have been in the script or maybe this was a choice on your behalf, Felipe. When you see the bully and you see the various directions that he could go in, like Luther sees him, what was the decision to make that in blue? Because that's what it was with the sequence with his mother. But is it blue for any particular reason? Is that just the color that you felt worked best here?
Well, the first time I colored the page with Luther's mom dropping the plates, we had to go back and forth with a bunch of versions of how the power would look like. And eventually Justin and I, we settled for the blue, and while keeping the rest of the picture very pale and like in a second, like in the background, everything sort of goes back and the blue stands out. It was purely visual and a way to really make those quote unquote power panels really let the reader know he's not actually seeing that, but just like a visual manifestation with the very intense blue popping out, indicating it's like not an actual ghost, but not exactly what's going on, but like a vision of Luther.
Yeah, that was one of those things that was kind of there as, and yeah, that was actually, now that I think about it, yeah, we did go through a lot of options to get that the right effect. As also, we put in some other visual cueings, like you'll notice throughout the thing, whenever it's close on Luther's eye, he's either coming into or out of using his powers. Those kind of things were just there as visual indicators of what was going on, so people could get kind of a grammar going of how we were representing things.
Yeah, and also with those, with any, there aren't many times in the comic that he sees the kind of ghost vision of what the character could be doing. But yeah, like Felipe said, he kind of desaturated the rest of the panel to really make the blue pop. And then also with those, the ghost images, I always did as like a separate overlay, and I just did them in pencil as opposed to inking those, just to, you know, further show, hopefully, that this is not what the character is actually doing. You know, he's not multiple man, like, flipping into a bunch of different characters. So yeah, I think in that term, you know, it took a couple tries, but I think it's a successful visual cue.
So the next sequence that we have is on the boat. And this may be one of the sort of trickiest sequences of the issue. Like, as much as there is a lot that is hinting at what's coming in the future, the previous sequence with the librarian and the tooth, that is the one that's more obvious of, I think, of what the intent of the introduction of the librarian is. Whereas the boat sequence is not. That is more of like the straight up horror, and it's got that sort of Jason Voorhees being chased aspect for with the librarian in the place of Jason. So what was the sort of intent of the second of the two-page librarian sequence?
The intent here was to show that the librarian himself is an incredibly dangerous person and an incredibly sick person. This is actually specifically a reference to Dracula and the ship that Dracula takes to get to the main action from Transylvania, the Demeter, I think. My Dracula foo is following me, but basically the ship drifts into port and Dracula has killed everybody on board. So it's kind of a reference to that. It is also a fairly oblique reference to Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash. There's a character who's said to have killed everybody, almost everybody on a submarine. and they mentioned that the blood was so thick that it was pooling in the halls, which you'll notice the last remaining crew member there is running through pools of blood. So that was a fairly obscure reference there, although the book's not obscure, but I didn't expect anybody to get that. But yeah, the basic intent of this was just to show you that, yes, this librarian is a very, very bad man.
Now, one thing I don't think I originally caught is that in the previous sequence, he is not in America at this point?
He is not.
Where was he supposed to be originating from with the previous sequence?
The Land of Nod.
Fair enough.
Bible stuff. When Cain left after doing his Abel thing, he eventually migrated to the Land of Nod. Which nobody really knows exactly where that is. For the purposes of this story, it's somewhere in the Middle East. One thing that's funny, it's not at all apparent here, is the only reason that the librarian takes a boat is because he's afraid of flying.
There you go.
I don't want you to know that, but that's one of those character things that I find vaguely amusing.
And I also like to add something in page 19. There's another power shot. It's the third panel with the librarian seeing through the sailor's skin. Which is a power that Luther also will display later on. There's also that cue of keeping sort of everything around the figure kind of bluish and having that figure be really red and to stand out against the background and to show that this indeed is like how the librarian is seeing this guy through his skin and into his muscles.
Yeah, that's actually that's a good point. I actually should have mentioned that too. That's there, as you'll see early in the next issue. That's there to let you know that there are some distinct parallels between the librarian and Luther, and that their power sets are the same.
So as we move towards the final sequence, and it's in the bathroom, we also get to see the power shot in this sequence as well. It's here when Luther's looking at the bully as he's thrown up against the wall here. With the reason to close out the issue like this, with him punching out the bully in such a crazy way, is that basically... I guess talk a little bit about how you decided to close with that final punch.
We wanted to... For the most part, the other manifestations of Luther's powers have been less violent and less meaningful. In terms of, you know, he basically accidentally did the thing with the dodgeball. This is pretty intentional. And we wanted to show that he's becoming dangerous in terms of what he can do physically. And that he has a certain amount of repressed anger, especially when it comes to women. Which definitely comes up a lot over the course of it. And, of course, like, there's... the big panel, obviously, that's the talk-aboutable one is where he punches the bully and blood goes everywhere. But, like, the real, like, money shot for that is when Luther is saying, holy shit, and he's got that smile on his face because, it feels good to be able to kick somebody's ass. Just kind of, that was all meant to lead into the next issue and kind of get us started where we're really going with all this.
Now, I wasn't sure if this was intentional or not, but the way that we have a larger panel across the top of Luther punching the guy, and then the panels along the bottom that show the various reactions, is it intentionally a parallel to the opening sequence with the larger fight sequence?
To me, a lot of it, it's a... It, the whole open panel, big splash thing, and then a series of smaller ones under it, it's something that I kind of inherently do just because I think it's an interesting way to set up a page. And also, the way Justin writes, it's very rarely is there a page that is less than, like, six panels. So, like, I have to do certain things to... like, if I want there to be a big panel on there, you know what I mean? There has to be a way to allocate the rest of the panels in a smaller area. So, it was not... When I drew it, I was not thinking of that opening panel. But then upon seeing... Or the opening spread. But then upon seeing the book in its completion, I caught that and was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But yeah, no, the reason I like that last scene a lot and where it comes right after the librarian scene obviously there's a lot of parallels between the librarian and Luther, but it's also something that I tried to play up as well visually. So yeah, like Justin brought up, the very last panel of the book, you know, where you have Luther looking at his hand and smiling, in any way, shape, or form, that would be a little unsettling, and it adds to this kind of like unsettling quality that Luther, both the character and the book, have. But coming directly after seeing the librarian do what he had done on the boat, I think it adds to the drama and the kind of like creepiness of that scene, because you go, okay, well, he's getting the powers from this guy who wants to find him or whatever, this force, and then is he going to turn into this thing? So yeah, I think the placement of those two scenes is really good, and that's a complete offshoot from what you asked me, but hopefully that makes sense.
This is also actually one of the very few, maybe the only page, where I actually asked Trad to change something.
It's true.
The initial pencils for this, when he had punched the bully, there was like an eyeball popping out. And it was pretty like, nobody's going to survive that kind of a punch. Which I was like, we need that bully kind of intact for the next issue. So, and I think that might have been the only suggestion that I ever asked Trad to change anything.
It's definitely the only time you told me to pull back from a violent thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because actually, I think at that point, I hadn't read the second issue. I wasn't sure how bad off the bully was going to be, so I inherently took it a little further. But, yeah.
You know, page 20, it starts with a cool green, very normal, and as you guys said, it gets creepier as the scene moves along. A bit of red starts to seep in, the green gets sort of yellower, sort of weirder. So if you compare page 20 with the very cool green and then 22, where it's entirely insane, the green got yellower and weirder, and there's a lot of red. That's the sort of thing I try to get into the pages to help, like, the mood and the action move along.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that, but these three pages here and how it kind of, like, goes from normal colors to this almost like creepy, like rainbowy type effect. It ends up coming up again, you know, in later issues when something brutally violent happens, and that was all Felipe's doing. And it's something that I really came to love about the coloring, because yeah, once again, it kind of had this, you know, it is a superhero book, but I think with these horror tones, I think that whole, like, when things got really creepy horror, it almost had this twist to it when you add that color, that rainbow color to it. To me, it very much reminded me of almost like in a horror movie when that music will kick in, you know, like whatever creepy music it might be. To me, that color has the same effect on a scene in a comic as music does a lot of times in a movie. So I really loved what Felipe did with those pages.
Well, thanks, man.
No problem.
And yeah, I agree entirely with Trad. Like I said, like, I don't think colorists in general get enough credit for what they've done, and Felipe's work has really, really added to what we did here.
Yeah, I wanted to say that last panel of Luther Strode is, it's absolutely excellent with the way that the light sort of shines upward at him.
Yeah, really creepy, very, very warm. Yeah, it's very unsettling.
And one other thing, and this is a very little thing, but that I absolutely love about this scene, and this might be just the weirdest thing ever, but in the very, when the scene opens and you see the very first panel and all the writing and scribbling on the wall, that alone is pretty hilarious, because, you know, everyone wrote on the walls in high school. But the thing that's funniest to me is that S, that weird stylized
yes,
S.
Yes, everyone did that, man.
Yeah, exactly, because everybody did that. So the fact that it's on the wall is, like, I hadn't thought about that in years, and then it's here.
There was a lot of things in the bathroom that is, like, really offensive-type stuff, because for whatever reason, bathrooms are the most offensive places in the world, because everyone, I guess, just goes to write, like, the meanest things they can think of, and they know no one will ever see it. So, yeah, if you look at the writing that I did on the walls, you know, it's just, for some reason, yeah, you always have, like, swastikas in bathrooms for some reason, and then just, like, really weird stuff you know, and so yeah, I have a bunch of things that everyone can relate to when they go into bathrooms and you just look at the walls and you go like, who in the world thought this was a good idea? But yeah, so I added all of those what the fuck type things that you see in bathrooms because I thought people would immediately relate to be like, yep, that's what my high school bathroom looked like.
That was certainly my reaction.
Yeah, I mean, that's how, because yeah, Justin specifically wrote, he was like, make it grungy, like a real high school bathroom. And so that was the route that I took with it.
So looking back on the issue as a whole, and you know, I'm sure all three of you have something for this, but what sort of like little behind the scene things that you know that you threw in, Easter eggs, references, but things that we didn't cover as we went through? What have we missed?
In issue one, I think we pretty much nailed everything. It's the later ones that I end up. I mean, there's little character has an X-Men shirt on, you know, in one scene Pete is wearing, the Star Wars, like, Rebel insignia, and then, yeah, like I said, the Black Flag t-shirt, there's the Wii 3 comic book, and then also other posters on the wall, I'm trying to think, I got a Resident Evil 4 poster, a 100 Bullets poster, Doom, Dragon Ball Z, Invincible, like there's so much stuff that I just threw in. I'm actually looking through it right now and catching stuff that I had forgotten about. But yeah, as for issue one, I think we pretty much caught everything. I'll be able to add a lot more on later issues, you know?
Yeah, I think we pretty much covered most of the stuff. I mean, there's stuff like Voorhees High, which Trad had mentioned briefly, which of course is just a, you know, Jason Voorhees kind of reference. Basically because I thought it would be funny. Expect to hear that phrase a lot from me.
Oh, yeah, and I also, I just caught this one, too. I also was sure to add a, if you notice that the bully, Jacobson, in the final scene is, once again, this is nothing against UFC. I actually really enjoy watching some UFC, but the type of high school kid who would be the big football player and have his UFC t-shirt on that kind of has that like Ed Hardy design thing going on. I put that kind of shirt on the bully guy because I thought that kind of summed up, once again, that summed up the type of guy he was. And then also when we get into issue two, I think the posters that I put in his workout room enhance that personality of his that I think people can relate to.